Hey, welcome to Shir Kli Yakar Parshas Vo'era. If you want to do one very long Kli Yakar tonight, where the Kli Yakar goes through the order of the Makos, most of which are contained in this week's Parsha, and tries to give us a framework for understanding the Makos, the various plagues which struck Mitzrayim. In other words, you know, were these just haphazard, you know, random acts of destruction that the Ribbono Shel Olam sent down, or obviously the answer is no. You know, what is the pattern, you know, as to why certain plagues were sent and the order in which they were sent? So that's that Kli Yakar. We talked about this at length. It's in Perek Zayin, Pasuk Yud Zayin. The very beginning of the Makos by Makos Dam. Pasuk says, Ko Amar Hashem, Bizos Teida Ki Ani Hashem, Hine Anochi Makir B'Masa Asher B'Yodi Al Amayim Asher B'Yor V'Navchu L'Dom. I'm going to strike the waters of the Nile with my staff, and they'll turn into blood. Says the Kli Yakar, Loshem Zeh Nemar B'Makir Rishona Shol Seder Datzach, V'chein B'Makir Rishona Shol Seder Adash, Nemar L'man Teida Ki Ani Hashem B'Kerif Ha'aretz. Chen b'makor rishona shol seder be'achav nemar ba'avur teida ki ein komoni b'chol ha'aretz. Right, we know from the Pesach Haggadah that the makos, broadly speaking, are divided into three basic divisions: tetzach, adash, be'achav. Right, the first three, the second three, and the last four. That's also not haphazard, says the Kli Yakar. You know, tetzach, adash, be'achav. It's not just simply a nice mnemonic to remember the Makos, but the fact that it's divided into three sections shows that the Makos themselves can really be thought of in three different units. And isn't it striking, says the Kli Yakar, how at the beginning of each of those units, at Dam, Arov, and Barod, there's a statement made to Paro, the reason Hashem is sending this Makos is l'ma'an teida, in order that you should know that I am Hashem. It says it slightly differently in each of those three cases, but that's the basic idea. L'ma'an teida, in order that you know that I am Hashem. Gam Moreno Rav Yitzchok Abar Benel Nisorer Alzeh. The Abar Benel points out that there's a similarity between the opening makkah of each of these three sets. And he writes, Supirei Shaparo Hayacholik Al Gimel Dvarim. And he writes that Paro argued on three theological points. Ha'echad u'mitzias Hashem, ki chichesh b'Hashem v'yomer lohu, v'lo yodatias Hashem. Right? Paro denied the existence of God. Al-kei nemar b'makar rishon b'zoz teidak yani Hashem. That's why each of the first sets of the Makos comes to reiterate the idea that there is a God in the world. Hashnia. Shehu cholek lomar in timsa lomar shiyesh elokah benimsa mikol makom eino mashkiach bashfolim al zeh nemar ki ani Hashem mekarev haaretz. Said Paro, even if there is a God, certainly God doesn't pay attention to what goes on down here in this lowly earth. You know, there's no notion of providence. And ashlishesu shehu cholek al yicholas Hashem yisparach lomar she'en yochol l'sharos hateva klau. And finally, you know, Paro said, even if there is a God, and even if God is aware of and has some interaction and cares about what's going on here in down on earth, certainly God is incapable of performing miracles. Certainly God cannot, you know, change nature itself. Says the Abar Benel, these three heresies of Paro were countered with the three sets of Makos. The first set of Makos, Tetzach, says the Abar Benel, established that there's a God, right? And that's why Tetzach is introduced with the words that we have in this pasuk. Bavur teidak yein komoni b'chol ha'aretz. I'm sorry. V'zos teidak yani Hashem. Sorry, I passed it the third time. V'zos teidak yani Hashem. You should know that I'm God. The point of the first three makos is to know that there is a God. The second three makos starts off with the words Leman teida ki ani Hashem bekerev ha'aretz, right? Because the point of Adash is to establish that God has an interaction with the world. God is, you know, we don't just believe in a deistic God who started the world and then kivyocha walked away from it. God is involved in the world. I'm bekerev ha'aretz, in the midst of the land. And finally, the last set of makos, Be'achav, establishes the idea that God can change nature. Bavur teida ki ein komoni b'chol ha'aretz. You should know that there's none like me in all of the world, in all of the land. Meaning, the natural laws which I set up can be violated by virtue of the makos. Right. So that's the Abar Benel says. There's a progression. First we establish that there's a God, then we establish that there's a Hashkacha, then we establish God's Hashkacha extends to his ability to make miracles. Now, one of the questions one can ask on the Abar Benel is that, to some extent, all of the Makos are miraculous. I mean, what do you mean that the last Be'achav, you know, indicate that God is able to change nature, you know, specifically, what, and the first six Makos did not indicate God's ability to change nature? I mean, let's just start with number one. Dumb. I mean, you know, turning water all over the place into blood is clearly a miraculous event. And I, you know, one can argue that some of the later makos don't display anything necessarily supernatural. Arbe. Is Arbe a supernatural phenomenon? I mean, one can argue that a swarm of locusts, again, to this day, maybe not to that extent, but to this day, there are still swarms of locusts that plague the Middle East. You know, to say,
Hashem can take the natural phenomena and make them do what he wants them to do.
Right, but that's a little bit, that's not exactly what the Abar Benel is saying. The Abar Benel is saying that God can change nature. Right? And that's the point of the Be'achav. I don't know. So, you know, it's certainly a nice idea that there's a progression in terms of establishing that there is a God, establishing that God is involved in the world, establishing that God can change nature, but you have to work on trying to make that relate to the specific makos.
That's what we're also about to change nature.
I'm sorry? Oh, what?
That's what we're also about to change nature.
Right. So there too, you know, how does this Abar Benel work with everything? So says the Kli Yakar, I like the basic idea of the Abar Benel, but I want to take it, you know, take the ball and run with it in a different direction. But Omer ani lahosif bir al dvarov lahachnis kol gimel makos tachas sug echad ki gimel makos rishonim ba'u la'ames metzias Hashem yisparach lefi shamitzvim amru shayorhu Eloheim einod milovato. Right? The first says the Kli Yakar, like the Abar Benel, I agree that the first three makos come to establish that there is a God. That I agree with. Now, what's unique about the first three makos that they establish that there's a God more so than the other makos?
Jewish God or a God?
A God, you know, one God who made the world. So he writes, the first Makkah is clearly meant to demonstrate the existence of God because the Egyptians treated the Nile as a deity. Right? So by striking the Ya'or, by striking the Nile, so that, as our Pasuk says, Lamat Bavur Bezos Teidaki Ani Hashem, by my striking the Nile, you'll see that I'm HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Well, the Inyan had Svardim Shishar Tayyar. Horish Shigam Hayyar Yishros Dvar Ham Amsim Mitzios Hashem Yisparach. Ki Parahoy Machal Hashem Ve'omer Yadati Yis Hashem. Al Kain Hodia Hayyar Ki Roy Lakadesh Hashem. Ki had Svardim Kidshu Hashem Berabim. He says as follows. The plague of Svardim of frogs also demonstrated that there's a God in the world and not the Nile whom the Egyptians think is God. And he basically explains the the phenomena of the frogs as follows. It's bad enough that the Nile turned into blood, right? That the their god, their deity, whom they think is a source of life, turns out to be associated with death. But not only that, the Nile produces frogs who are Mekadesh Shem Shamayim, who sanctify the name of God. The Tzvardim are an instrument to demonstrate what Kiddush Shem Shamayim is all about. What's that all about? So he quotes the famous Gemara Pesachim. Gemara Pesachim says that the Tzvardim, the frogs, actually were ready to martyr themselves. The Pasuk describes how the frogs would jump into all different places, including Tanu Recha, the fiery ovens that the Egyptians had. And of course, you know, if a frog jumps into a fiery oven, usually not so good for the frog, right? And yet, a miracle took place, says the Gemara in Pesachim, that whereas all of the frogs died after the Makom Tzvardim, the only group of frogs to survive were the frogs who had been Moser Nefesh and jumped into the ovens. They were Moser Nefesh and they were safe. And in fact, says the Gemara, when Hanan, Mishael, and Azariah later on in history are threatened that they have to bow down to the great statue made by Nebuchadnezzar or be thrown into a fiery furnace, Hanan, Mishael, and Azariah say, if the frogs could jump into the fiery furnaces and be prepared to give up their lives, certainly we should be ready to jump into the furnace and to give up our lives as well. So in other words, the Tzvardim represent the idea of being Mekadesh Shem Shamayim, of ready to sacrifice oneself for the Ribbono Shel Olam. The notion that the very deity of Egypt could produce, you know, creatures who are ready to die al Kiddush Hashem is the ultimate slap in the face to the Egyptian theology. Chazal indicate that they didn't die.
They didn't die.
Yeah.
They weren't fine. They weren't fine.
Right. Right. No. Yeah. So that's Tzvardim. And Kinim, he writes, Kinim, we see that the response of the Chaitumim to Kinim was to say, Eshba Elokimi. It's the finger of God. So in other words, Dom, Svardeya, and Kinim all established that there is a God, as opposed to the Egyptian belief that saw the Nile as being some kind of deity. Right? So like the Abarbanel, you know, the Kliyakar agrees with the Abarbanel, the purpose of the Yetzach is to show that there is a God. Uvaseder Adash Nirmaz Again, similar to the Abarbanel, rest the Kliyokar, Adash, Arov Devrishchin, shows God's Hashkocha Pratis, his involvement and his knowledge about, you know, every person's private affairs and actions. Lahotzi, Milei Ha'omim, Shein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mashgiach Kimal Klalos Hamin, Beloved Pratis, I'll call Darchei Ish. There are some people who believe that God engages in Hashkocha Klalos, that God watches over the human race in a general sense, but not that God is involved in the lives of individuals. There are people who have that perspective. Says the Kliyokar, Adash was to counteract that perspective. Ulefi divreyam akol nichnas bi'irbuvia, kien hazdel ben ish l'chaveir ben oved elokim asher lo avodo. What's the perspective of someone who has hashkacha, who believes in hashkacha klalis, that God watches over perhaps the human race, but does not distinguish between individuals? So they see God as meeting out people's fates, the erbuvia. Everyone's mixed together. The good guys, the bad guys, the nice guys, the not so nice guys. Everybody gets it the same. You know, there's no sense of a distinction or a difference between individuals. Irbuvia, everybody's together. What's Irbuvia? Irbuvia is Arov. Arov, it's not just that God sent wild animals, right? The term which the Torah uses is Arov, a mixture of wild animals. The truth is, if you think about it, it's a funny thing. Why do we care that it's a mixture of wild animals? Let HaKadosh Baruch Hu send 5 million bears, you know, against the Egyptians. What, does it bother me that it's lions and tigers and bears? Right? It says, you know, if you sent a million lions, if you sent a million tigers, whatever it is, it would be as ferocious, right? So why do I care that it was a mixture of different animals? So says the Kli Yakar, that's deliberate. The fact that it's a mixture of animals is to counteract the idea. You believe that all humankind is mixed together, we're all the same, right? You know, there's no difference in the faith of someone who's a God-worshipping, God-fearing person and somebody who's not. Yet you believe in that, your punishment is going to be the mixture of all of the animals. The distinctions between animals are going to be removed the same way you wish to remove the distinctions between people.
First of all, I thought Chazal said that only Yidden have a shkok about this, and the rest of the world has a, I don't know what you call it, but not the same level of shkok.
Shkok HaKlalos.
Shkok HaKlalos, right.
Right, so he seems to be working with the idea that Hashkacha Pratis is something which applies to everybody. Or let's put it this way. There's certainly Hashkacha Pratis in the world. Now, the truth is, the notion of Chasidei Umos HaOlam Yeshlam Chelek LaOlam Abo would seem to indicate that even with the non-Jewish world, you know, God will reward people accordingly. It's not all one big mishmash where everybody ends up in the same place. Right? You know, there is a concept of everyone being rewarded accordingly for the things that we do.
Also, Rabbi, this other thing. I don't know if anybody talks about it, but I just wrote it down. The fact is that these mixture of wild animals, you know, certain animals, if they see a certain species, you know, that's, you know, like some of them know that you can't mix certain animals together because they'll be killing each other. There was no killing among the animals. The animals were peacefully getting along with each other to do the will of Hashem, just to attack humans.
Right.
You never had bears attacking lions and attacking lions.
Interesting. Okay, yeah.
That's
right, no, it's an interesting idea. So that's Arov, right? And Dafka by Arov, the Torah says that Viflesi Bayomahu is Eretz Goshen. The land of Goshen is going to be set aside. They're not going to suffer from the Arov. Where the Jews are is not going to be subject to the same Arov. So Dafka, Arov is a mixture. But the Jews and the regular Egyptians are set apart from one another, indicating that there is this notion of Hashkacha Pratis. The same is true with Dever, the second of the Adash. Dever strikes the cattle of the Egyptians and leaves alone the cattle of the Jews. So too when it comes to the Shechin, to the boils. He makes an interesting point. Says the pasuk says with regard to shechin, v'lo yachlu achartumim lama b'bnei hashechin, that the chartumim, the sorcerers of Pyra, were unable to stand in front of Moshe because of the shechin, the boils that afflicted them. Ki hoya hashechin b'chartumim v'b'chol Mitzrayim, the shechin affected the chartumim and all of Mitzrayim. So I think the way we normally read that pasuk is that the shechin affected all of Egypt, inclusive of the Chartumim. But if you read the pasuk carefully, that's not exactly what the pasuk says. Ki ayo shechin b'chartumim, kama uvechol Mitzrayim. And says the Kli Yakar, what that means is that the shechin struck in stages. The shechin first afflicted the Chartumim. Ki ayo shechin b'chartumim, v'achar kach uvechol Mitzrayim. The Chartumim were the first to fall. And then the rest of the Egyptians were stricken by the Shechin as well. So that
the magicians,
the sorcerers, right? So the singling out of the Chaitumim, of the magicians, the sorcerers, is another example of how God is not just striking people, you know, randomly or irrespectively, but there's a very clear distinction being drawn. You know, the Chartumim deserve to be punished first because of their role in helping the populace deny the existence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and then everybody else is going to be stricken second. Well, yeah, they said that, but you know, at the same time, they I guess they needed to be punished for their role, you know, with Dom and Svardeya, you know, in trying to copy the Makos, even by Kinnim, they try to copy the Kinnim, right? But they're unsuccessful. So Esma Elokim, they say somewhat begrudgingly, But you know, they need to be punished for the fact that they were, you know, they were they played this important role, you know, in helping the people deny God. Right. Sounds like not. Sounds like not. I guess so. Yeah. All right. So here's where the Chatum get their own. Says, you know, says the Kliyok. The truth is, you know, it fits very nicely into the Psukim because, you know, v'lo yochlo chatum l'amo b'nei Moshe b'nei Ashkin, the chatumim couldn't withstand, you know, stand up before Moshe because of the Shkin. Why is that necessary to tell us? I mean, after all, presumably, if everyone was stricken, everyone was stricken, you know? The answer is because they got it first, you know, and that highlighted the fact that they were, you know, in a special category, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, has this notion of Hashkacha Pratis. So that's Adash, the idea of Hashkacha Pratis. B'seder be'achav Pireish Rav Yitzchak Bar Benel Shebo la'amis yicholas Hashem Yisparach. Finally turning to be'achav, so he quotes the Bar Benel, and again the Bar Benel said that the purpose of be'achav is to show how God can engage in things that are miraculous. God can change nature, right? He can engage in the supernatural. And again, that was the one that we had the hardest time with, because, you know, what's more supernatural about the plagues of Be'achav than the rest of the plagues? So, writes the Kliyoker a little bit of his own knetch. V'li nireh sheparo ta'an shtei reshuyosein. It seems to me that Paro claimed that there are two deities in the world, like many groups throughout history. You know, that the Zoroastrians or the like, you know, who believe there's a good God and a bad God, you know, a good deity, a bad deity, yin, yang, you know, the whole thing. So Paro as well also believed that there were the force of good and the force of evil. So the point of Be'achav was to establish not only the existence of God, but the uniqueness and the monotheistic nature of God. Right? There's no dualism over here. There's only one God. Ki ein kamoni b'chol ha'aretz. There's no other deity at all who has any power. The Yichud Hashem. That's what's established by Be'achav. Rav Saloma ein od milavad yisparach ezer v'shus acher. There's nobody else besides that. How is that brought out? Through the Be'achav? The three last makos strike the heavens in particular. Let's go through them. Barad, right, obscures the sun. I mean, after all, Barad is hail, right? When it hails, the sun is obscured. Arbe, the pasuk stresses how, again, the sun is obscured, right? Vayichasis ein ha'aretz. And of course, when it comes to Choshech, the sun once again is obscured. So what you know, the common denominator between Barad, Arbe, and Choshech is the hiding away of the sun. Why? Because again, in the ancient world in particular, the sun was typically seen as a contender, you know, for the role of being a deity. We know, by the way, from ancient Egyptian history, that at one point there was an attempt to introduce the worship of a sun god. Right? I'm sorry? Right? Yeah. What's that? Okay, yeah. All right. We'll call him Ve, right? You know, Oy Ve, right? So I'm sorry.
Aztec civilization,
I believe in that. Right. So in other words, there was an attempt to introduce the worship of a sun god in particular. So you know, the obscuring of the sun, you know, was a way of the Ribbono Shel Olam showing there's no other force in the universe which is comparable to me. Even the heavens are subjugated by the Ribbono Shel Olam. So Be'achav teaches the idea, or Be'ach teaches the idea of the unity of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the exclusivity of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ki ein kamoni b'chol ha'aretz, there's no one else like me. Even the sun itself, which potentially you could see as being a deity, is going to be obscured. Right? That's the idea behind these three sets of makos as exemplified by the Kli Yakar. Right? I thought it might be interesting, and the Kli Yakar doesn't say this, but it might be interesting to take this one step further and suggest the following. We know that the Rav Yosef Albo, the Baal Sefer HaYikarim, famously develops the idea that there are three basic beliefs that we believe in Yiddishkeit. There are many beliefs we believe in, but three basic foundations of our beliefs. The belief in one God, right? The belief in Torah min HaShamayim, God revealed the Torah, and the belief in Schar Va'onish, the belief in reward and punishment. To some extent, these three ideas of Be'achav, these three ideas rather of the Tzach, Hadash, Be'achav, correspond to these three principles. The first principle, the Tzach, there's a God. The second principle, Adash, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, rewards and punishes people. Schar Va'onish. And Be'achav, there's an exclusive God, fits in with the idea of revelation. Torah can only be binding if we believe that there's no other option. You know, if Torah is the handiwork of one God, but Rahman al-Islam, there's some other God out there who has a different set of laws, so then what compels us to follow the Torah as opposed to that other set of laws which is out there? You know, the whole idea of Torah min HaShamayim is predicated on the notion that there's only one God. So that's the Be'ach, you know, at the end of the Makos, right? Setting the stage. Again, this is pre-Matan Torah, but it's setting the stage for Matan Torah. The notion that there's only one God, because otherwise, you know, if there were multiple gods, what would make, you know, the Torah any more binding? You know, if we don't like the Torah, so we'll go down the block to the other God and see what he has to say and how we could serve him, you know, potentially. It's actually interesting to note, in that order, the Rav Yosef Albo writes that the three brachos we say on Rosh Hashanah, Musaf, Malchus, Zichronos, and Shofros, also correspond to these three ideas, but in a reverse order. Again, Malchus is God, Zichronos is God, is Mashkiach, Atazocher is called Anifal, and Shofros is the idea of Matan Torah, Atun Iglesa, Baran Kvodech, Alam Kanshech, Aladadar Imam, right, the idea of Matan Torah. So, that's actually, if we're correct, that's actually the order in which these ideas are presented, the Tzach Hadash Be'achav, Malchus, Zichronos, and Shofros. That idea of the three basic Yisodos comes out in the Makos as well. Having presented this framework, the Kli Yakar goes a little bit further, and he goes in to the specific Makos and what each Mako was supposed to teach and why each Mako was Mida Keneged Mida, was a real punishment for the Egyptians for what they had done to the Jews. Right? So that's a little bit further. V'hinei Makas HaYor. The Egyptians had said that the firstborn son should be thrown into the Nile. Right? They had also tried to undo the bracha given to the Jewish people, v'yidgu larov b'kerev ha'aretz, that the Jewish people should be like fish and multiply. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu struck the source of the fish in Egypt. The pasuk stresses, v'adogah asher b'yor mesa, the fish died. So you Egyptians sought to counteract the bracha given to the Jewish people to be fruitful, like to multiply like fish, so your fish will die. That's the Makkah of Dumb.
Why the fish shulden?
What?
Why the fish shulden?
You know, I don't know that. You know, I don't know that you have to fight in for what, you know, what the fish did wrong.
They're giving up their life.
Right. Right. I guess so. Right. Right. You know.
Yeah, but the mice and the fox giving up their lives, they will lie.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean.
Okay,
can you ask the same kasha on the gefilte fish you have on Shabbos? What did he ever do to you? You know? Tzardim, he says, that, again, the Tzardim, as he said before, are Mekadesh Shem Shomayim, so it's the ultimate response to a paro who denies the existence of God. Kinim, so he says, when a person works hard, they sweat, and you know the ancient belief was that sweat produces lice, and the spontaneous generation of lice from sweat. Again, we look at it differently nowadays, but certainly the ancient belief was that sweat would produce lice. So the people being stricken with lice is reminiscent of the sweating of the Jewish people that was imposed upon them by the avodah kasha, by the you know the tremendous labors that the Jewish people were forced to endure. Arov is sending wild animals against the Egyptians. Earlier in last week's Sedra, the Pasuk says, or the Mialdos say about the Jewish people, Ki chayos heina. The Jewish people are like chayos. They're like animals in the sense that they give birth without a midwife. You know, they can take care of themselves. So, says the Kli Yakar, the Jewish people, you the Egyptians sought to put down the Jewish people who are like chayos in that sense, so you will be punished by chayos. Gever, right? The death of the cattle. When the Jewish people, when the Shvatim come down to Mitzrayim in Parshas Vayigash, they're described as Anshei Mikne. They were people who took care of cattle. You, the Egyptians, sought to subjugate and enslave those who took care of cattle. Your own cattle are going to die. So Kli Yakar says. Shchin, the boils. So says the Kli Yakar, Shchin is associated with making marital relations extremely difficult. Right? He quotes Bereishis Rabbah that when earlier Paro, took Sarah into his harem, you know, away from Avraham Avinu, it says Vayinaga Hashem es Paro. Yes, Beisa, HaKadosh Baruch Hu struck Paro with all kinds of illnesses. Specifically, Sei Chazal struck him with Shchin. Why? Because the Ribbono Shel Olam wanted to keep Paro away from Sarah. And Shchin, a person who suffers from Shchin, can't engage in marital relations.
What are Shchin basically?
Boils.
What's the book? What does Shchin mean?
Boils.
Boils.
Yeah, a person has all kinds of pus-filled protrusions that grow all over his skin, right? So we know that one of the things the Egyptians did to the Jews was that they separated husbands from wives. So you sought to disrupt marital harmony, so you're going to be stricken with a disease that symbolizes the inability to carry out marital harmony. Barad, the Kli Yakar later on writes that it's striking. If you look at the Torah's description of the Makkah of Barav, so what frightens Paro most is not the hail coming down, but Paro consistently talks about these kolos, right? These sounds that he keeps hearing. Right? If you go through the Parsha of Barav, again at the end of the Sedra, you know, again, Paro harps on the fact there are kolos. Ribbono Shel Olam, hail is coming down from the heavens and decimating Mitzrayim. Who cares about, you know, these sounds? Alright, so you hear thunder. It's not the thunder that should bother you, it's the hailstones that should bother you. Thunder never kills anybody. Hailstones can kill people if they're big enough. So he says the idea of the kolos, again literally thunder, but kol also means voices. And when Moshe Rabbeinu first came to power in last week's Sedra, Paro's response was, Hashem says, let the people go. Mi Hashem asher eshma b'kolo. Who is Hashem that I should listen to his voice? So a beautiful interpretation says to Kli Yakar, the Ribbono Shel Olam says to Paro, oh, you don't want to hear my voice? You'll hear my voice till it's coming out of your ears. Right? Barad is going to be overexposure to the kol Hashem. And then you'll learn your lesson.
Was all this after Hashem hardened his heart?
So Paro seems to harden his Hashem seems to harden Paro's heart about halfway through the Makos. That's where it seems to happen if you go through the
Pesukim. What was happening here? Thunder? What was it? Hashem speaking?
Right. So you know the way the Kli Yakar seems to present it is not just thunder. is some kind of supernatural noise generated by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, meaning he heard the Kol Hashem. I don't know what the Kol Hashem is, but in other words, it wasn't just, oh, it's thundering. Right? What spooked Pyro out was the sense that he's listening to the sound of HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. Arbe, locusts, is derived from the word harbe, right? Many. And the truth is, on the simple level, why is arbe called arbe? Because, you know, there's no such thing as one locust, right? No one can see just one, right? Arbe is always a swarm. That's why it's called arbe. Arbe means the many, right? So, the Egyptians had, you know, Pyro had said at the very, very beginning of last week's Sedra, Pen Yirbeh, lest the Jewish people increase. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, oh yeah, Pen Yirbeh, I'll send Arbeh. Right? You don't want increasing? I'll send that which is an increase. I'll send that which is a multitude. Choshech, darkness, says the Kli Yakar, because the Gzeros of Paro forced the Jewish people to hide away their children, just like Moshe Rabbeinu was hidden away. Moshe Rabbeinu was fortunate. He survived. Not all of the children who were hidden away survived. You know, the Jews oftentimes would hide away their children and they would be caught by the Egyptians. Right? You made us hide away our children in darkness, so to speak. You will be afflicted by darkness. And that darkness will cover over everything that's part of Egyptian society. And finally, Makas Becharos, you know, is really spelled out in the Pasuk itself. You know, last week's Ezra, we said, when Hashem first appears to Moshe Rabbeinu, and he says, B'ni Bechori Yisrael, the Jewish people are my firstborn son. Hashem says, tell Paro, if you don't let my firstborn son go, I'm going to kill your firstborn sons. Mido k'neged mido. Each of the makos, says the Kli Yakar, corresponds in some way to some aspect of servitude or injustice which was perpetrated against the Jewish people. Mido k'neged mido. Everything is lined up in order to, you know, these are not arbitrary makos. These are makos which are meant to drive home to Paro that he's done terrible things in dealing with the Jewish people, right? So that's, you know, in a beautiful piece over here, the Kli Yakar really gives us a framework for understanding the Makos.
Why did Hashem
still
just on 10? Why not 12? That's the point of why the 11 numbers.
Right, so the truth is 10 is the number that indicates completeness. God created the world with 10 ma'amoros, so God is manifesting himself as well with these 10 different manifestations. Okay, we'll pick up Ezra Hashem next week, Wednesday night after Ma'ariv. I don't think we have a minyan here, so we'll just call it quits for tonight, and Ezra Hashem pick up next week.